Python that says now for something completely different. So my name, like I said, is Douglas Cook. I'm the director of the Crop Biomechanics Laboratory, and my group has been attending these meetings for the last couple of years. We're all engineers. We're trained in human biomechanics and also in biomedical engineering, and so now we're trying to apply those same skills to try to help make address issues with stock lodging and try to improve crops. So some of this material is probably not what you're used to seeing here, so I'm going to give a little bit of a background. Before I do that, I'd like to recognize my co-authors. Dr. Daniel Robinson is in the audience, and we couldn't have done this work without a good set of collaborators. So one of the first things we did as engineers when we were looking at this problem with crop stock lodging is we wanted to understand what was happening with the failure. And so engineers don't like things to break. We lose our jobs or people get hurt. So if something breaks, what we do is we typically do a very detailed examination of whatever it was that failed to try to understand what went wrong and to try to understand why that failure happened, and then we can try to design a solution to prevent it in the future. We went out and did that with maize stocks, and we looked at natural lodging in the field, and what we saw is a very consistent pattern. Whoa, it's going by itself. It's pointing. There we go. We have a crease failure, which happens very predominantly, and it happens very close to the node. That's good news because it means that now we have some idea of what we're dealing with, and we can start to try addressing that problem. We then, with that information, were able to design a laboratory protocol that would imitate that failure pattern inside the laboratory. And so we use a technique called three-point bending. Importantly, what we need to do, we found, is we need to place the loads and the supports at nodes. It's a little hard to see in the picture, but we're placing the supports and the loads at nodes there. And what that does is it allows the failure pattern to mimic what we see in the field. Any other loading arrangement we tried didn't produce that same type of failure pattern. The next thing we did is that we created a computational model. I'll show you a picture of it in a minute, but this is a detailed, we call it a finite element analysis. It's a pretty sophisticated engineering tool that is a, like I said, a computational model of the maize stock and the stresses within it. And then we subject that to a sensitivity analysis in which we vary all of the parameters, both morphological and tissue, to see how these factors affect the stresses. And we found that the geometry or the morphology of the stock had a strong influence on the stresses within the stock, while the material had a much lower effect. And that agrees with what we see from engineering theory. The stock, here's the original stock model, and the red indicates stresses. Once we'd done this, we said, well, what would happen if we kind of smoothed out some of these morphological irregularities that happen near the node? And so we performed smoothing on that stock, but without changing the volume. And what we found was that indeed the stresses were reduced quite a lot. And so this suggested that perhaps the shape could be one way in which we could manipulate the stock architecture so it could be more effective. So this is just a model, though, and a model is just a model. Now we need some experimental validation. That kind of gave us a hypothesis, and so now we need to validate it. We use this study design. This thing has a mind of its own. We use a study design involving five commercial hybrids grown at five planting densities. That gives us a nice spread of different morphological features. We have two locations, two replicates, and 10 samples per plot for 1,000 stocks total. These were sampled just before harvest, so the stocks are fairly dry. And then they were dried down a little bit more so that they'd be shelf-stable in the lab. And our experience and our previous publications in this area suggest that that's fine. We still get the same failure patterns in the lab that we see in the field. Okay, so this is the data collection slide. Like I said, we perform three-point bending, and that's this top picture. And then we also did rind puncture resistance by forcing a needle through the rind near the node where it was loaded. And that's a technique that's been used in the literature to assess stock strength in the past. Now, what we did to assess morphology was we did high-resolution X-ray computed tomography scanning. Now, we knew that this, the failure would happen in that region, so we performed those scans before testing. And this is kind of a picture of what you would see. And those vertical lines that you can see there are 46 samples that we extracted from the CT data. For each of those 46 images, which you can see some representatives there, we had a computer algorithm that would go and automatically extract a host of geometric or morphometric parameters, and then we could catalog those. There were quite a number of those. Here's just a partial list, but they include, you know, obvious things like the major and minor radius or diameter, the rind thickness, the areas of the stalk and the rind. We pull out the CT intensity, and we pull out the moment of inertia. Has anybody ever heard of this term? One? Okay, so I'll explain it. It's also known as the second moment of area, which is much more intuitive explanation because it's the integral of the area, and that area is weighted by the square of its distance from a reference axis, which is usually drawn at this geometric center. And so things farther away from the center are given a great deal more emphasis than things close to the center, which have potentially zero emphasis. So obviously, if you take an I-beam and you add one unit of area, it depends where you add it makes a lot of difference. If I add it here, I get an increase of 35% in moment of inertia. If I add it on the little ends, I'll only get 7%. If I add it in the middle, I only get 2%, just to kind of give you an idea. And the reason an I-beam is the shape of an eye is because it's essentially the optimal way to get a stiff structure with a minimum amount of material. Okay, so now some engineering beam theory. I told you this would be different. Okay, this is a very classic, simple equation from engineering theory, but it says that any beam, whether it's a steel beam in the roof or, say, it's a carbon fiber fishing pole, which has bending loads, is governed by this equation. The stresses in the structure are going to depend on the moment, that's the applied loading, the radius of the structure, and then the moment of inertia, which I just described. So those two terms are purely geometric or morphologic, and so they're often combined, and this term is called the section modulus. It's all geometric, and then the other term is just the loading. What you see from this equation is that your tissue stresses are inversely related to your shape. If you have a larger section modulus, you're going to have lower stresses for the same loading configuration. And since failure happens when its internal stresses exceed some threshold, a larger section modulus would be expected to reduce failure. So that's the engineering theory behind all this. So now on to the data analysis. This is just kind of to orient everyone to the data. But here are the five hybrids. And then stock strength is here on the left, and rind penetration resistance. The five planting densities are here along the bottom. And so you can see that the planting density has a strong effect on plant strength. And you can see differences between hybrid 4 and hybrid 3. However, in the rind penetration resistance, these effects are not as clear. Okay, now I'm going to take you further into the data. I mentioned that we had 46 sections from the CT data that we sampled. So we originally thought, because the failure happens close to the node, that we would see the highest correlations in the data in that region. It turns out that near the node, in the meristematic tissue, all kinds of geometric things are happening. The rind thickness is changing, the diameter is changing, everything's changing. But the failure location is fairly random. And so if you try to do correlations in that region of kind of volatile geometric changes, you get very poor correlations. And so if you go just above that, about 3 centimeters above the node, you get pretty stable correlations. And so that's the region that I'll be using for the rest of this talk. Okay, so if we look at those morphological parameters and we do just a simple univariate regression, we find that indeed section modulus comes out on top, followed by the moment of inertia. Remember, the section modulus includes the moment of inertia, so those two co-vary. The rind area shows up, and then major, minor diameter, rind thickness. Maybe those things are kind of expected, but the rind penetration resistance didn't do very well. And the CT intensity, which is some kind of measure of the tissue, has almost no relationship to strength. Okay, we can break it down further. We can start to do regressions based on agronomic factors such as the hybrid, the planting density, the locations. Here's rind penetration resistance against stock strength, and you see quite a lot of variation when you do these regressions, when you break it down by individual data sets. On the other hand, when you take section modulus and break it down, much less variation. And so this gave us the idea that we could start to use data, break it down into training and validation sets, but the training and validation sets would be wholly different from each other. We wouldn't be sampling part of the data for the training set and using another part for the validation, but actually we would be using, so for example, we take hybrid one regression line, is that blue one right there. So we can take hybrid one as a regression line, and we can take data from hybrids 2, 3, 4, and 5 and say how well does the data from hybrid one, how predictive is that on the data from hybrids 2 through 5? And so that we call, it's a training R-squared, and this is the predictive R-squared, is the R-squared between the data of those hybrids and the regression line of hybrid 1. So we did that analysis for every hybrid and all the planting densities and every factor and broke it down. I don't know what's wrong with this thing. Okay, so here's the univariate regressions, which I show you in the bar chart. Here's the training R-squareds and the predictive R-squareds, and the bottom line is that there's not a lot of variation across these rows. The section modulus consistently predicts above 75%. 75% of the variation in strength predicted merely by morphology, nothing else. And, these other ones, you see the same kind of pattern across here. Most of these are fairly predictive, but when you get down to rind penetration, you see strange things like a negative R-squared, which can happen when you're using data that's not from the same data set at all. I mean, it's a very poor fit. CT intensity is a very poor fit. Okay, so can we make sense of this? And we can. From an engineering perspective, one of the things that came out of this is that we realized that the maze cross-section is an almost perfect ellipse. If you convert this into ellipse with a major radius, a minor radius, and a rind thickness, those are the three values you'd need to make a shape like this. And once you have those, you can have analytic equations for the rind area, the moment of inertia, and the section modulus. So now you're just taking just three measurements, the diameter, two diameters, and a rind thickness. You can get these values, and you can then compare the value, those same values computed from directly from CT data. Lo and behold, they're remarkably well correlated. This is 125,000 data points with an R-squared of 0.998. So the cross-section is almost perfect, an almost perfect ellipse, which is kind of remarkable. I don't know what's going on in the mind of a maize cornstalk that it thinks it should be an ellipse, but it decided that that's a pretty good shape. We're still trying to figure that out, by the way. Okay, so now that is actually helpful in interpreting what's going on here. The section modulus was the most highly correlated, and that's what we call mechanics-based regression. We're using a theory from mechanical engineering to infer the regression that we're doing instead of just using terms linearly in an additive or cross terms or squaring terms. We're actually using this equation, which comes from the engineering theory. Yeah, but it explains that the moment of inertia has a high correlation because it is part of the section modulus. The rind area covaries with the section modulus because look at the form of the thing. It's almost exactly the same form. So this is a case of correlation, not causation. And then here's those three kind of fundamental parameters that describe the ellipse. Of course, they covary with the section modulus because they're all in that equation. The section modulus, not only from a statistical point of view, but from a theoretical point of view, explains what's going on. And so we feel very comfortable that this is a causal explanation of what stock strength is governed by morphology. And then finally, we can do some interesting analysis. We can take that analytic equation, we can break it down and say, all right, the section modulus is the big daddy. How do you change the section modulus so you get the most effect, the most bang for your biomass buck? And that is, if you increase the section modulus in the ratios of, if you take rind thickness to minor diameter to major diameter, and you increase those in ratios of 27 to 2 to 1. So most of the increase is in rind thickness, but then you also want a little bit of additional minor diameter and a wee bit of major diameter, and that's the optimal direction to modify the section modulus. I'll just conclude. There are acknowledgments and our funding sources, and if you like hearing more about engineering, there's more stuff from our lab in posters and talks and different sessions. Thank you.